This is a reading of a collection of lectures by Rudolf Steiner entitled The Influence of the Dead on Destiny. This is lecture 6, entitled New Spiritual Impulses in History, Their Rejection by the Materialistic World Conception, and the Result of the Catastrophic Events of World War I, given in Dornach on December 16, 1917. In the background of all these considerations stands a question that in the present age is far more materialistic in its fundamental conception than can be imagined. This question refers to the origin of certain historical events. People speak of historical necessity, that the events that took place in the past year, for instance, were historically the result of events that took place in the preceding years. What I characterize here as historical reaches, of course, into everything proceeding from human actions, that is, into social, moral, and cultural life in general. The materialistic conception does not only consist in leading spiritual phenomena back to the sphere of natural science, or to a material cause, but it also exists in many other things. The materialistic conception would actually like to eliminate the concept of free will. It would also like to interpret the events taking place in the course of history in the same way that it contemplates scientific matters, namely that a preceding cause always produces, with a certain necessity, something that follows it as an effect. Then people say, and believe they are thinking very clearly when they say this, that all events, even those that have broken out in our world with such catastrophic force, are a necessity. In this sense, meaning with the idea of scientific necessity, this is perfect nonsense, although the statement that all events are a necessity is justified in other directions. If we consider the complicated organization of human nature we discussed yesterday, we will gain insight not only with our understanding, but also with our feeling into the depths of the ordering of our world. We will also gradually lose the habit of thinking that this reality can be embraced by abstract ideas of scientific laws. Then our gaze will fall on certain phenomena in nature that can teach us many things, if they are looked upon in their true light. An example would be a phenomenon like the following. Every year, a great number of life germs develop in the ocean, seeds or embryos that do not become living beings. The life germs or eggs are laid, and most of them perish. Only a small part of these grow into real living beings. This, of course, does not only happen in the wide ocean, but also in the whole of nature. Consider how many life germs are supposed to become living beings, even in the short space of 1 year. How much is meant to become alive and does not attain life when eggs are laid that do not develop? We could say that all these germs of life contain causes that do not produce effects. Indeed, anyone who considers nature in an unprejudiced way, especially without the precise theoretical opinion that every cause has its effect and every effect has its cause, will find that there are countless things in nature that must be designated as causes, although they do not produce the same effects as when the causes live themselves out completely. There are countless instances where life is interrupted, so to speak, and does not attain its goal. This is something that you can see outside in physical nature. If spiritual investigators ask themselves what corresponds to this in the spiritual world, they will find something very strange. They will find something that corresponds, in a certain sense, exactly to this standing still of life in nature, but also corresponds to spiritual nature. We have seen that often, but not always, the spiritual must be characterized as having qualities that are the exact opposite of those found in nature. We have seen natural causes that bring about no results because the process is interrupted. And what is disposition in the cause, disposition is one of the worst possible words for the comprehension of reality, does not develop further. In the same way, spiritual investigation shows us that effects arising in the spiritual world are determined by causes just as little as in the natural world. Yet here we have effects. Let us ask concretely what spiritual investigators see when the eye of their soul, EYE, sees such repressed processes of life. The physical eye sees that the eggs perish. But the eye of the soul and spirit sees that where such eggs apparently perish, something endowed with being arises in an earlier, not yet material stage. If we wish to investigate what really happens when material causes have no results, then we must dream in a cosmic sense, if I may use this expression. In our ordinary consciousness, we can only dream egoistically. When we dream at night, our dreams are connected with our own organism, and we are not connected with our surroundings. When we connect with our surroundings and at the same time develop the forces we develop in dreams, we experience imaginative thinking. We can experience consciously through imaginative thought what is kept back in the processes of nature and does not reach the stage of physical living beings. Beings arise from such repressed life germs that are only accessible to imaginative thought. We could dream of them if we dreamt as beings belonging to the hierarchy of the Angeloi, instead of as human beings. In fact, if I may use this expression, the Angeloi dream of the beings that are simply the products of the life germs that have only apparently perished, rising up every year in great numbers from the sea and the earth as elemental forms. If we enliven this thought properly, we can see a kind of elemental life arising out of the earth like a spiritual fragrance. We ourselves are embedded in this elemental life with our own souls. But we are in this elemental life in an intense manner, for we take part in the process I have just mentioned. As human beings, we participate very intensely in this process, as do the animals. How? Well, there is no difference between what happens when a certain quantity of fish eggs are laid in the sea, eggs that do not develop and only give rise to elemental existence, and what happens when we see the seeds growing out of the earth. How many grains of wheat are predetermined to become wheat plants, and yet they do not grow into plants because we eat them? In this case, we ourselves, in our daily processes, connect ourselves with what develops as elemental existence. In the grains of wheat and in other products that we use for our food, we interrupt the progressive process. We do not allow the life germs to become real beings, but through our own existence, we cause what was destined for something else to become an elemental process that can be seen only through imagination. But the reality that lies at the foundation of this imaginative life takes place because we ourselves are placed into the process and participate in it. From the grains of wheat, from everything else in nature that we consume in this way, an elemental life arises that permeates us. We take up this elemental life and are within it. We have here the foundation of elemental life. We can exist, so to speak, only because we interrupt another progressive process and spiritualize it. Even when we eat, we spiritualize a process that would otherwise take a purely material course. The opposite is to be found in the spiritual world. There we find effects that have no causes, such as a billiard ball that moves because another one hits it. When we contemplate such things, the idea of cause and effect loses its meaning. Effects arise in the life of our soul and spirit, effects from the spiritual world that we cannot say have been caused. We face the elemental results, parenthesis, that arise, so to speak, in the form of fragrance from the processes just described, close parenthesis, with desires arising from necessities of life. We must eat. Hence, we must embed ourselves into these elementary processes. Just as we face such elemental processes with a certain lust or desire, so do we face spiritual effects, which are in a certain sense devoid of causes, with antipathy. Inasmuch as we are physical human beings, we strive to prevent these effects from the spiritual world from entering into us. If you try to grasp this somewhat subtle thought, you will see that we are surrounded by a spiritual will that strives to enter into us. At first, we do not face it with desire. We are not even inclined to accept it. It is as if will impulses were constantly floating around us in the air, but we reject them. When clairvoyant consciousness develops, it soon comes to light that imaginative things surround us and that we are hindered by inner obstacles from taking up this imaginative element. Let us consider this imaginative element as a reality. Just as here on the earth a certain number of life germs perish every year, so do spiritual imaginative things live in the spiritual world that always surrounds us. They can indeed be reached through imagination, but through our human disposition we place obstacles in the way. These obstacles are not to be looked upon in an abstract way or in general. They must be grasped as concrete and differentiated obstacles. What develops every year as an ascending elemental life out of physical life develops spiritually in other time periods, descending and becoming something that we reject. This occurs in other periods of time that are not very regular. There are times when the spiritual life surges around us very strongly, and many things wish to come to us, and there are other times when the spiritual air around us is not so full. We may take up a more or less receptive attitude, although generally speaking, we do not feel inclined to take up this kind of existence that can be reached only through imaginations. But certain conditions may enable us to be receptive. We shall still speak of this. Or we may take up an entirely rejecting attitude. Let us suppose that in a certain period of time there are many such beings that want to approach us in a spiritual way, and that we reject them. What will happen? By rejecting these spiritual beings who want to come to us, humanity creates the opportunity within itself for a continuation of the old, withered processes that continue to spin their dry threads, so that they produce dead results instead of bringing about a living result. It is just the same as if a plant that has reached the end of its life were not taken away, but were to continue as a dried-up, lifeless plant to the damage of its surroundings. In the course of historical events, this takes place in the following way. An age approaches. The beginning of the 20th century was essentially such an age, in which spiritual beings are waiting to approach human beings. An age when we are called upon in every way to open our soul to new revelations. Yet people reject these new revelations. Then the old continues to spin beyond its limits, for these old processes are not fructified anew by human beings. What has not been fructified continues to spin on in a dry and barren way, and this causes such events as the present catastrophe. One of the most important causes to be found in the spiritual world is the fact that as the 20th century approached, world development took a course that made human beings oppose the new revelation, for reasons which we shall still discuss. One might say that the spiritual world was full of all that was offered to humanity in the form of new spiritual knowledge and impulses, yet humanity rejected them. Why? Undoubtedly, such things are connected with conditions of human development. We know that the materialistic age had to come. It has its good qualities from certain other aspects. The materialistic age came, and one of its consequences was that people formed ideas that were connected only with one side of human nature. Yesterday we saw that each of the four members of the human being, physical, etheric, and astral bodies, and the capital I, is really of a different age. When we are 28 years old, we are 28 only as far as our physical body is concerned. Our so-called etheric body is 21, the astral body is 14, and the I is only 7 years old. Yesterday's considerations show this quite well. The I, for instance, lives in us, disregarding the other members, more slowly so that it is still a child of 7 years when we have reached the age of 28. When we are 28 years old, according to our physical body, this child of 7 is indeed connected with quite different worlds than that of natural scientific necessity. But in this materialistic age, people have become accustomed to form only ideas that can be applied to the relationship of the physical body with its surroundings, and everything is judged according to this. The human being, such as he or she stands in the world, is really a complicated being, as we have seen yesterday from many aspects. What a person believes to know and then says about himself or herself in our materialistic age is only a quarter of all that pertains to the human being, only what concerns the physical body. We can speak of scientific necessity only in regard to the relationship of the physical body with its surroundings. What can we say when we consider, for instance, what is a child of 7 in a person of 28 years, disregarding the other members? Here we must speak of something quite different, something from which this illuminated, infinitely clever age has turned away completely. Strange as it may sound to a modern human being, we must speak in this case of wonders, of miracles. Wonders, in the sense that people often imagine them, or as imagined by people who like to go to spiritualistic seances, are things which a real spiritual science cannot address. Wonders lie in entirely different spheres. Wonders lie in spiritual happenings. Just as necessities lie in the outer events of nature, so do wonders lie in spiritual events. No human being who enters the physical world from the spiritual world and proceeds to a physical incarnation is a physical necessity. Human beings are a necessity only in that they themselves determine this necessity, because they have made the superconscious decision in the spiritual world to connect themselves with a certain hereditary stream. The cause does not lie in father and mother. They merely provide the opportunity. The appearance of every human being in the physical world is a miracle, a wonder. The entrance into the physical world of the part of the human being that is 7 years old, when the physical body is 28, is always a true wonder. And every question regarding this, from a natural scientific point of view, concerning the cause, unquote, in quotes, is nonsense. It is nonsense to ascribe to heredity the part in us living so slowly that it is only 7 years old when we are 28. If we really want to find out its origin and ask where does this 7-year-old part come from, we come to the spiritual world that we share with the so-called dead, and where we lived before descending into our physical body. Those who can think in an unprejudiced way could indeed form thoughts concerning such things, even though it is very difficult in our materialistic age. Think how much Goethe occupied himself with scientific thoughts, and how exemplary his scientific ideas are. He had, as you know, a constant longing to go to Italy. And when he finally saw the great works of art in Italy that gave him a conception of the creative artistic activity of the Greeks, he wrote to his friends at Weimar, quote, "Here is necessity. Here is God." Close quote. He wrote of a necessity not rooted in natural science. He could have had a sense of that natural scientific necessity from his previous scientific work, but he instead sensed the necessity that shines from the spiritual world and is the same as the wonder or miracle. But our age is an illuminated one. Our contemporaries are very clever. For this reason, they have not only rejected the unjustified conception of wonder, but have banished wonder even from the spiritual world. But to banish wonder from the spiritual world implies nothing less than doing everything possible to thoroughly miscomprehend the spiritual world. The things coming from the spiritual world appear to us only as effects. If we look for the causes, we cannot find them. For a spiritual investigator, this is an unconditional truth. At the end of the 19th century, people's lack of feelings of wonder and reverence for what sought to come to them as revelations from the spiritual world had increased to such a high degree that there was an aversion for such revelations. For these revelations come to us in the same measure that we develop reverence for all that is profound in the world. What can enter into the world order as wonders may also not take place, can also not be there. This dulling of human feelings of wonder is connected with what was not taken up in the age approaching the 20th century. If we wish to speak of the causes of our present catastrophic events, we will find these causes are not human actions, but instead are sins of omission. This is the essential point. Many times in recent lectures I have pointed out an excellent philosopher who lived in the middle of the 19th century, Carl Christian Planck. In many places I have seized the opportunity to draw attention to Planck, because he wrote a book that is, we might say, his philosophical literary testament. This book sketches the details, even the spiritual details, of the present world catastrophe. Indeed, one may say that he does not just give intimations of them, but really describes them in advance. The book was written in 1880. How could he write this? Planck could write it because he was one of those spirits who could see at the right time what was taking place. If you have a house that needs to be repaired, it must be done in time. If you wait until it cannot be repaired any more, it will collapse, and the catastrophe occurs. Our present catastrophe is nothing but a collapse. The right time to bring about what might have taken place instead was during the 1870s and 1880s. People like Planck, who pointed out what was bound to come, never become, as we all know, leading personalities in outer life. When a leading personality, a statesman or someone similar, must be found, people do not naturally turn to those who know something, in the sense of Carl Christian Planck. These people cannot be used. Instead, people choose others who very often can do nothing to repair and support the falling house. If we only look into the background of life, it can be proved historically that revelations from the spiritual world were given to many people. Planck is not the only one. At the right moment, the revelation of the event that humanity was facing. There might still have been time to avert the course of such an event. Of course, no one listened to Carl Christian Planck. Even now, who listens to those who say what must be said to effectively avert a catastrophe years before the catastrophe takes place? Unfortunately, we must say that the way humanity has lived through this catastrophic event up to now clearly shows that if it lasts another 4 years, human beings will become accustomed to it and will accept it as normal life. Indeed, this has already progressed to a high degree. Those who understand the times, however, today ask what must take place. For if something does not take place, the consequences will necessarily arise decades later, because something was left undone at the right time. But what should take place according to the present conditions of time cannot be discovered in the surrounding physical world. If we wish to hear the right things, it is necessary today to listen to those who can speak out of the spiritual world. Of course, less important things are fulfilled more quickly. One may say that in perhaps 5 years human beings will recognize that they should have listened to many things, and they might already have known many things if they had listened at the right moment. But they are not inclined to hear these things. They only like to hear things that are visible in the outer physical world. But this physical world has no significance for the historical course of events. It does not show the impulse, the motive force behind events. What is to be the starting force and impulse for events in social and ethical life must come out of the spiritual world. In our age, humanity should be educated that to understand a very great event in the course of human evolution, they must believe in free will, in historical world development, and wonder is identical with this. This point lies in the conception of the spiritual message of Christ, of the mystery of Golgotha. In earlier times, humanity had an entirely different relationship to the mystery of Golgotha, and the further we go back in history, the greater this difference is. We have often spoken of this. Today it is not possible for human beings, especially for those who are most advanced in the sense of the spirit of the age, to understand the event at Golgotha as an historical event, resembling other historical events. As a foundation for the argument to be dealt with here, I only need to point out that the significance of the Gospels as historical documents has, as you know, been shaken. We cannot consider the Gospels as historical documents in the same way that we consider writings concerning Socrates, Plato, Alcibiades, or Caesar as historical documents. It is impossible to view the Gospels as historical documents and to look upon the resurrection of Christ as an historical event in the sense that other historical events and facts are proved historically with the way of thinking adopted in modern historical research. It is not possible to speak of Christ Jesus as an historical personality, in the same way that we speak of Charlemagne as an historical personality, according to so-called historical sources. He who sees through such things will realize that the time has come when those who love truth and try to understand things through truth must say that what used to be considered as historical sources for the mystery of Golgotha has been shaken because of the form adopted by modern historical investigation. One must, indeed, be very dull, for instance, like Adolf Harnack, the famous theologian, to stand up again and again and state that what can be asserted concerning Christ Jesus on a quarto page constitutes an historical document in the meaning of modern history. Of course, these things standing on a quarto page are just as little historical documents as the Gospels, according to Harnack himself, are historical documents. But an attempt like the one of Harnack, to which hundreds and hundreds of others may be added, is connected with the lack of truthfulness of our age regarding such things. Such attempts are never willing to draw radical conclusions. Nevertheless, these are the right conclusions to draw. The conclusion we must come to is that, in accordance with what lies before us, we must confess that we cannot find Christ Jesus as we seek him in an outward historical way. We must find him through spiritual investigation. This is how we shall surely find him and the historical event at Golgotha. Why? It must be this way, because the historical event at Golgotha occurred in the course of human development through freedom of will, in a much higher sense than is the case with other historical events. And because human beings must accept its validity through inner freedom. Events that can be proved historically cannot be accepted freely. Events that have no outer historical proof are accepted for spiritual reasons and on a spiritual foundation. We are free. We become Christian through freedom. And in our modern age, we must understand, above all, that we can be Christian in a real sense only through complete freedom, and not through the compulsion of historical documents. The task destined for our age is that Christianity shall gain the truth through which it will become the great impulse for the human understanding of freedom. It belongs to the fundamental truths of our age that it be understood that the evidence for Christianity must be sought in the spiritual world. If this insight becomes as intense in human nature as it should become, it will give rise to other insights. We should learn to answer for ourselves this question: how can I make myself more receptive to the recognition of what is not forced upon me from the physical world, against which I may at first even feel an aversion, an antipathy? What makes me more inclined toward this? It is not out of personal vanity or conceit, but rather only because I wish to bring a concrete example that I have pointed out on many similar occasions, that I began my literary career by refraining at first from setting forth my own opinions. Instead, everything that I set forth was connected with Goethe's spirit, in a conscious retrospect of a spirit who entered the spiritual kingdom of the so-called dead in the year 1832. But read what I wrote in connection with Goethe in the time preceding my title, Intuitive Thinking as a Spiritual Path, also called Philosophy of Freedom. The so-called Goethe investigators study these books chiefly with respect to the question of whether or not they give a rendering of Goethe's views. They receive Goethe's views only if the writer is a literary ruminant. In other words, if he only repeats what Goethe said during his incarnation up to 1832. I was always of the opinion that we really do not need to repeat what Goethe said, because Goethe himself said what he wished to say far better. It is always better to read Goethe's own works than the opinions of schoolmasters, even when they are such excellent schoolmasters as, for instance, Lewes, who wrote the famous Goethe biography. What I tried to write is based on the inspiration of a Goethe who is no longer on the earth, the continuation of his ideas in a certain sphere after death. I wrote what could be written out of a certain feeling of a living relationship with the so-called dead. I mention this as an example, and indeed not out of conceit and vanity, but because it is connected with the question of what human beings must do to become more receptive to what comes from the spiritual world. Human beings must develop a connection with the dead, but in a sensible, sound, really fitting way, not spiritualistically. The dead continue to speak after their death. We have seen that what they say and send down as impulses lives not in the experiences we gain through our senses, and not in our thoughts, but in our feelings and in the reality of our will impulses. But then we must also find within us what makes us inclined to approach the spiritual world. Antipathy for imaginations is connected with unbelief in the possibility of being able to approach the spiritual world. Antipathy for imaginations that wish to enter from the spiritual world in the form of impulses permeating our actions in human, social, moral, and ethical events. Only these impulses from the dead can make human beings free. Two things are necessary in our age: to penetrate wholly into the truth that the acknowledgement of the mystery of Golgotha must be a free deed of the human soul, and to seek in a real way the bridge to the dead, not merely in an abstract way or with abstract faith. In our age there is a great aversion to this. People do not at once see through all that speaks against it. What ideal do human beings have today as far as social life is concerned? They think, quote, "We are clever people. We were born and went to school, and that is why we are so clever. We are clever human beings, and consequently we know very well what must happen in social life. We call together meetings, elect officers, councillors, and parliaments. People discuss there what must happen in social life, naturally, for we are clever." And when such clever people of the present age come together, the right things must result. Close quote. This is the ideal, but it is based on an assumption that is not correct, namely that people know right away what is right. Have you met anyone who knows what is the right thing for the year 1917, the year of this lecture? Not those who are now 20 years old and love to sit in Parliament to talk and determine what is the right thing for 1917. Those who died long ago know this best of all. We should ask them what we should do. This provides a great deal of the answer to the question of how we can improve our social life. Learn to consult the dead. As physical human beings up to the end of our life, we know, as a rule, only what is convenient to us personally. Only when we are dead does our knowledge become really mature, to such an extent that it can really be applied to social life. But one must not think that the dead can have a direct influence physically in the course of events, more or less like physical human beings. The dead know, more than the living, what must happen socially. But human beings living on the physical plane must listen to them and be the instruments carrying out the knowledge of the dead. Modern human beings must learn above all to become instruments. But such, quote-unquote, parliaments, if I may use this unpleasant expression, where human beings will strive to let the dead also be heard, will not exist for a long time to come. But no well-being can come in certain spheres unless the dead are consulted, unless social life is spiritualized also from this direction. Before believing that the knowledge gained here on earth through birth, the world, and school is ripe for social impulses, we should penetrate into what has really become ripe for social impulses, the wisdom of those who have already laid aside the physical body, a wisdom that can reveal significant points of view if we really investigate it. Just imagine how much deeper the life of feeling will become, what a deepening the human soul will experience when what I have now expressed in the form of thoughts become feeling. Imagine when the ancient myths that connected human beings with their ancestors are replaced by the link that I have mentioned. When a concrete spiritual life will again permeate our spiritual atmosphere, and what can thus be grasped through spiritual science in the form of thoughts passes into the soul and feelings, and human beings will really live in this. The end of Lecture 6.